What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Black Expat Podcast. My name is Carl, and I'm excited to be rocking with you guys for yet another episode. Hey, I'm not going to lie. I love the addition of the sound effects. I'm going to use those a lot. If you've been a part of my previous live broadcast, if you've tuned in, then you are very well aware. This is something I do every Friday, America time at 11 p.m. Eastern. 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. And I also do this Saturday mornings at 11 a.m. Taiwan time. Again, I know last week I told you guys I was going to bring you guys updates about events going on around the island of Taiwan. I do want to focus on one in particular that I talked about last week, community convos. I've been following, I've been reading, I actually talked to a few people that went to it. If you are in Taiwan and you want to be a part of a good conversation, you want to go and have a safe space to communicate, community convos up in Taipei is a great place to go to check those things out. If you're like me and you're down in Taichung, come to my bar, Arts and Crafts. We also have a safe space for you to kind of talk to expats, black, white, whatever, and kind of figure out, you know, just talk about things that are going on in the world. In that same, like on that same wavelength, I would be remiss if I did not take a moment to honor the late, great Supreme Court Justice that just passed away today. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, hope I pronounced her name correctly. First of all, thank her for all of her contributions to her family, friends, and anyone that was inspired by this amazing woman that we were all privileged to have be a part of the Supreme Court for as long as she has. One of my favorite quotes from her, again, I studied her a little bit in high school and in college, was this one. A lot of you guys that know me know I have a lot of sisters, my mother, everyone has, you know, mother, a lot of sisters, and I've been working with young women. Mentoring them, men and women, but majority women mentoring them for the past 7 years. But one of my favorite quotes from Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was this one. Women belong in all places where decisions are being made. One more time. Women belong in all places where decisions are being made. So again, just a real quick moment of silence for Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And thank you so much for your contributions that you've made to us. For us during your time here on Earth. So shout out to that. Want to get that part, make sure I set that and get that part out of the way because that's really, really, really important. So today, what are we talking about, right? So I know you guys have heard me speak ad nauseum about expats during this time, not being able to go home or deciding to go home and what it looks like to go home, right? I haven't been able to speak to anyone in particular who has actually said, you know what, I'm going to go home and I'm going to go back to America or go to any other country. I haven't had someone on the podcast kind of interview them about their experience going back to America or going to any other country outside of Taiwan. Because a lot of people that are here in Taiwan that I've known have gone back and we've just 100% lost contact. Or they went back and they were so, you know, into being back home with family and trying to figure out where they want to work, how they're going to get jobs, et cetera, that it's kind of hard to get in contact with them. And honestly, I could imagine right now myself, if I went back to America right now, or if I went to any other country, the last thing on my mind, one, would be being on someone else's podcast because I have my own podcast. But you know, you're just so focused on what you have to accomplish and getting everything set up, especially if you're someone like me who spent so much time living, working, thriving in Taiwan. I've been here for 10 or 11 years. So going back home isn't a small feat. It's a really, really big thing that you kind of have to do. And you're taking your whole life back there. But for the purposes of this podcast, I don't want to focus on the why or the reasons behind why someone chose to go back. I simply wanted to discuss and talk about the process, right? Because, you know, things at the airport have changed. Like customs and checkout, I'm sure has changed. It's different. I don't know because I haven't been to an airport since last year. Many of us haven't been on an airplane or traveled or went anywhere, you know, in a substantial amount of time. So I want to talk about those. I want to talk about what is it actually like back home in America? What do people see on the streets? Also, if you go to a different country, what is it like being in other countries that aren't Taiwan? What is your experience like? Not an experience living there as an expat, because that's very, very different, right? Like for me in Taiwan, there were subtle changes that happened. So for example, wearing masks everywhere, getting your temperature checked. These are things that I can speak about because I see them every day. But there has to be a little bit of culture shock that is a part of your experience going, you know, back to America or back to your home country or going to any other country and dealing with those adaptations and dealing with those, the new rules, the process and all those things that kind of come with, you know, that are a part of the travel experience for one, but also the relocation experience. So I am very, very fortunate to be joined today by an individual who has gone back to America and also to Haiti. And I definitely want to welcome him to the show. So I would like to welcome my call-in guest for today. His name is Clifton. So once he calls in, we will go ahead and get started with the interview, which I'm really excited to jump into. Hello, Clifton.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. And yourself?
I'm doing okay. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast today. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Thank you. I'm happy to be a part of it.
Thank you. More than a pleasure. An absolute pleasure. So before we get into the actual interview, could you start by just introducing yourself, a little bit of background about yourself, and eventually what brought you to being here in Taiwan?
Well, my name is Johns Clifton Moreau. I'm from Haiti. I've been pretty much everywhere. I lived in America, you know, New York, pretty much. That's where I lived. I lived in New York. And I moved to Taiwan about 5 years, going to 6 years. I moved to Taiwan. So I moved to Taiwan, it was February 2015. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I had my life in America, you know, and then I was like, okay, pretty much, I would say a heart reason, which I'm not really going to get into. So I was like, and at that time I was lost. I was, you know, I wanted a place to get away. And then a friend of mine, one of my best friends, he was living here and he was like, well, just come here. And then back then I didn't know anything about Taiwan per se. I was like, oh man, I'm not even going to come to China. Cause you know, when he said Taiwan, the first thing that came to mind was like, you know, China. So I'm like, I'm not going to come to China. So he said, just come here. You know, it's different. It's not even China. It's another country. Just come here. Just, you know, just for fun. And then if you, you know, when you feel okay, you can go back to America. And then I've been here ever since. And, and as you mentioned earlier, before you got me on, I actually went back to America and actually went back to Haiti. And it is a really reverse culture shock. It is a really reverse culture shock going back, you know, after pretty much 5 years, going to 6 years living, you know, in a foreign country and adapting to the culture and all of that. It's, you know, it's really, really different.
So, because I had a very similar experience when, my journey to actually coming and being here in Taiwan, because when I heard about it from one of my professors, I didn't have any friends that were here. It was kind of like, yeah, hey, they showed me a video and I saw palm trees and I was like, man, I don't remember China having palm trees. Again, at the time I had no idea that, you know, Taiwan is next to China, but it's not necessarily in China. It's like, man, palm trees, nice weather. They did not mention the typhoons. I want to throw that out there one more time. Did not know there would be typhoons, but I also didn't know that what a typhoon was. I'd never been a part of one, but like I had no idea, you know, what the island would be like. So like, was there any apprehension about coming to Taiwan when you're actually making that decision? But more importantly, once you got here, what were one of the first things you realized, like 5 years ago, if you can take us back, when you got here, that you were like, man, this is actually a pretty cool place? And then after that, what made you want to continue staying here for the past 5 years?
Well, to be honest with you, when I first got here, I hated it. I'm gonna put it out there like that, because the weather was, because, you know, mind you, I left, you know, I came from, you know, it was from New York. It was in the middle of winter. And then when I got here, I had my jacket on, you know, I was ready for the winter. Cause I'm like, you know, cause when I checked online, I'm in my little Google search, it says, you know, it would get cold there. So I was like, all right, I'm ready. When I got there, I landed in Taoyuan, and you know, in the airport, there's AC, you can't really feel it. But as soon as I walked out, I'm like, okay, what's going on? Why am I sweating? So I was like, okay, it was really weird there. So, you know, I took a cab. And then besides the weather, it was really weird because when I first moved to Taiwan, I lived in Kaohsiung, which is down south. It's really hot and humid. And besides the weather, I didn't like the food. The food was really weird. You know, people putting ginger in food, you know, cinnamon and sauce and gravy. So I was like, okay, why are they doing this? And, you know, boiling eggs and tea, those are things I'm not accustomed to. I didn't know any of that in America. Even the Chinese food that you get in America, they're not like that. So I was like, okay, the food is ridiculous. The weather, it's not good. And the scooters, there were too many scooters everywhere. So I was like, why are there so many scooters? So I didn't like it. My first month, I was like, mind you, I got there, it was February 28th. So I didn't like it. I was like, you know what, I'm leaving the next week. So fast forward to that, my friend was like, man, just you know, give us some time. So let's say there's this, I don't know if you guys heard about that. There's this festival that, you know, usually happen during spring break. The first time this festival ever, you know, ever happened, it was in 2015, 5 years ago. So my friend was like, you know, there's this festival going down in Canteen. You should definitely come. I'm like, man, I don't want to go. I'm, you know, I'm already, you know, looking up for tickets to go back. I'm like, I'm not going. He's like, man, please, last chance. I'm like, okay. So I went there and I went to this festival. It was like, oh my God, this is South Beach, Miami. And then I had a blast. And then boom. And then, it, you know, there was one of the first thing. And then the second thing that actually got me going on here was the, you know, hospitality and the way that they were really welcoming to foreigners. And I've had a couple of experiences where people, Taiwanese, they had, you know, they went out of their way to just help me. And then they didn't, just for helping me. And after that, I feel like, you know, coming from America, when somebody's doing something extra for you, you feel like you got to do something, you owe them. And here right. You're like, okay, let me get your line. Let me get your Facebook. I just want to be your friend. So that sort of like, okay, this is a place I really got to, you know, live in just so I can, you know, work myself and then learn more. Yeah, that's pretty much the reason why they got me staying here.
I don't know. And honestly, I can definitely relate to that because one of the things that I kind of forgot, because when I first came here again, I have any friends. It was 11 years ago now. Oh my God. No Facebook groups, no Instagram, none of those things. And I literally ate the same thing. And I just thought about that. Similar to when I studied abroad in Beijing, I ate the same food in Taiwan and it was dumplings. It was a dumpling spot out the back gate. And I had one person that spoke English and I was eating dumplings pretty much every day for lunch and dinner. And sometimes breakfast, Wow. Unless, you know, someone at the school kind of got me breakfast. And I kid you not, to this day, I cannot eat dumplings. I cannot eat fried dumplings. I cannot eat steamed dumplings. The only dumplings I can eat is at a restaurant called Din Tai Fung. It's pretty popular, you know, around the island.
Yeah, and also
other places around the world.
Yeah, it's really popular.
But I legit cannot eat dumplings anymore because I ate them so much until I was able to figure out how to, like, find food that I enjoyed. And even, like, the food in 7-Eleven, I was so, like, Americanized. I'm like, man, I'm not trying to eat no gas station food. But then you realize that 7-Eleven isn't a gas station. It's a convenience store. It's a convenience store,
you know? It is. Because, you know, like, you know, 7-Eleven in America, it's a place, you know, you go get some gas. You're like, all right, let me go get a pack of cigarette or let me go get a bottle of water. But here, it is an actual supermarket. It's a mini supermarket. You get everything here, you know? This, you know, a lot of culture shocks. And it just, like, I'm talking about from a personal experience. It just, Taiwan is a place that it humbles people down. Like, you come here, the way that they live would definitely change the way you think about life and then the way that you portray yourself. Because it literally makes you feel like, okay, you know what? Things that I used to see that were important, or things, the way that I used to live back when I was in America, wherever I'm from. Here, it sort of showed me that it's different. I can still live my life, still be happy, do things like, you know, I want to do, or in a way I can do them, but I'm still going to have a comfortable or in a developed and good way of living. You feel me? So that's sort of humbling people down and make you more modest. This is one of the things that Taiwan sort of do to people. You know, me personally, you did that to me.
Did you ever sort of feel, because I know because I'm from Chicago and I've been in New York a few times. I have a lot of friends from New York just by proxy of the school I went to. But it's like, did you ever feel like, because I know when I first came, maybe because I spent time in Beijing, but being in Chicago, I always felt like I was on edge. So I'm walking down the street. I'm looking like I'm getting out of cabs and I'm like doing like the pocket pat. So I'm like, hey, I'll make sure everything's in my pockets. Nobody robbed me. Or like I'm walking down the street and I'm like, and I'm always looking over my shoulder, like, who is this person following me along the street? Make sure I feel safe. Or like, you know, like confrontational. Like, yes. Someone said something, especially since I understood a little bit of Chinese, because I have to realize that, yeah, the tones and the way that they say things doesn't mean that they're being aggressive. Because after, you know, I'm translating it into my own language, and I'm listening to their tones, I'm like, hey, wait a second, you got a little loud. But I realize they just talk really loud. If you watch them talk on a cell phone in any public place, they loud as hell. So like, was there any adjustment to like the way that you felt just walking around the island? As opposed to walking around New York where you were from before or where you were living before?
Well, literally the first 6 months was really tough because I didn't really like people sitting next to me because, you know, in New York, people like to sit next to you on the train. You get robbed, you know, pickpocketed. You definitely lose either your wallet or your phone, some of that. Like, one, you would lose something on a train for sure. So I didn't really like that. And I didn't really like people staying, you know, behind me when I'm walking, when I'm on a bus. Like, if I'm on a subway, because back, you know, in Kaohsiung, they have an MRT. So I'm on an MRT, somebody's staying behind me. I didn't really feel comfortable. So that could have, like, you know, I was always like, everywhere I go, people were scared of me because I'm like frowning at people and all. But it was just the fact that, you know, it's, you know, here they love staying away from each other, but at the same time, they love being close to each other. I don't know if it makes sense because, you know, when they were public, like, for example, if you go somewhere, they don't mind like bumping into you and then not saying sorry. It's not that they mean to bump into you. It's just that to them, it's okay because it's a crowded place. But at the same time, you would see that you would be like in a, like on a, you were on a bus. They would literally stay away from you, not wanting to sit next to you because they know that you want some personal space. But that, I had to adjust all of that. And knowing that, as you said, going places like, you know, in New York, you live in New York, you know, people like, it's a place that you gotta be on guard, like 24/7. So here I had to be like that. And then adjust myself saying, okay, it's safe. Nobody's going to rob me. Nobody's following me and all of that. So I had to work on myself and all of that. And then when you said the word, you know, confrontational, I've been places, going to clubs and looking at people, looking at me weird. And I feel like, okay, so what's up? You want to go? So I had to work on myself to not do that. And, you know, as I said earlier, that going back to America was like a real big reverse culture shock. Because you're like, you've been living here, you sort of like down yourself in a little way, and then going back to America, you're like, okay, so what do I do? No, I need to readjust. What do I do now? It was really tough, you know. But yeah, it was really tough doing that kind of adjustment to your life.
So like, the last question, like about just like being in Taiwan and things of that nature. But like, what ways or how did you find community outside of the friend that you had once you arrived here? Because I'm always curious as to how people go about finding and building relationships in different ways than I had to. Because so literally, I walked out of the back gate of the school that I worked at, and I was at 7-Eleven eating by myself, and I stumbled upon a person who spoke English. She was like, "Hey, I go to the college next door. Do you have any friends?" I was like, "Nah." She's like, "Okay, cool. Come hang out with us." And then from that one, like that one instance, that one random occurrence, I met 20 people that night, and then 10 of them became friends that I've known since I've been here on the island. So, like, in what ways have you worked or have you been able to build community while you've been here on the island in Taiwan?
Well, pretty much for me, it was a little bit different because of the Haitian community here. It's not big, but you know, they're like, they stick together. So when I was in Kaohsiung, there were a couple of Haitians, but. But me, I was like pretty more like, okay, I don't only want to have Haitian friends. I want to have other people that I, you know. So I'm like, I'm gonna just talk to this Malaysian guy, this Japanese dude. I'm gonna talk to everybody. But as you said, the connection, the link with all of that, with all of those communication, were English. You're sitting somewhere, you're talking, you're checking something, you like somebody's saying something in English. You're like, okay, you know what? I definitely got to go and holler at that dude because he's speaking English, so I could definitely, you know, I could definitely talk to him. So it was like that in Kaohsiung, and then I lived in Kaohsiung for like 5 months to 6 months, and I moved to Hsinchu. So in Hsinchu, we know already like, you know, done, like start to make the adjustments. And then by moving to Hsinchu, it was pretty much easier for me to start making friends. And yeah, it was pretty much easy. But it's the same thing you said. You heard somebody speaking English, you're like, okay, so I'm gonna go and holler at you and then see what's up. And then from there, you know, that person, you connect to that person and then becoming friends.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things a lot of people struggle with. I know I personally struggle with coming from Chicago, because that's just not like, I've always asked people, like, how do you go about making friends? And how do you remember making friends when you're back at home? And like, a lot of the friends I had came through school, like through socializing through school and then through college, and then maybe through friends you've had growing up connecting you with other people. When you're abroad, it's very, very different, right? You kind of have to have that willpower and like take that initiative to reach out to people that you either see just randomly out and about, or you hear speaking the language and have that confidence in that, you know what, hey, I'm going to take a chance. It might be a nice person, may not be, but I want to have more friends. So I'm just going to start talking to you. And if it goes somewhere, great. If not, then we'll kind of see how it goes. Cause I know for me, that's why one of my biggest things I always say, I always sit at the bar when I go to any bar. I don't like going to big pubs and clubs, stuff like that. But bartenders, one, know hella people, just especially good bartenders. They can connect you. They have resources. And usually they're friendly. And most bartenders in Taiwan nowadays anyway, not back in the past, but they speak English because like they get a lot of foreign customers in, and just they like socializing and talking to people. So I've made a lot of good friends just through talking to bartenders and walking in the bars and sitting at the bar. But also, like you said, just going out on a limb, talking to someone who you hear speaking a language that you understand and saying, hey, let's connect. Let's see what we can do moving forward. So what was it like for you going back to American into Haiti? Like, what was the process like going through the airport? Once you landed, was it as strict as you expected it to be? Was it a little bit too lax for you? Like, what was that process like just going back to the States?
Well, it was different in one way. Just that they sort of add this thing of taking your temperature and then make sure that you wear a mask. I think that's the only part that was different. And the other part was that there was not a lot of people. It was not crowded. Because I remember my flight from Taiwan to Seoul was, it was like probably five of us on the plane. So I kind of was traveling on my private own, like my own private jet. Because we were like five on a plane. Can you imagine that? Five people on a plane. So we landed in Seoul. And then my flight from Seoul to California to LA, it was like maybe 20 people on the plane. It was the same thing. You just, you know, get on the line. When you get in the gate, they come and take your temperature and make sure you wear a mask and tell you do not take your mask off, or, you know, all throughout the flight. And there was pretty much it. There's nothing really different other than not less people at the airports, and then you got to wear a mask and they take your temperature. But when you get to America, you know, this is where, you know, things go, you know, out of hands. Because in Asia, they really, because, you know, I like to call them, not that, you know, in an offensive way, just I call them robots, because they're like going, they follow every single thing, not trying to break anything, not trying to make any turns. They follow every single thing. But in America, I got to LA and I'm like, okay, I'm in America for sure. You see everybody, like people having their mask on their faces while they're sleeping on the, like, you know, people that are on layovers. And you're like, okay, what's going on? Why you put the mask on your face, on your eyes, like instead of putting on, you know, covering your nose? And then at the gate, you see people taking their mask off. You see people like, you know, not, you know, anti-maskers at the airport. You see these people too. And then the other thing was when I got to LA, when I flew from LA to Florida, because it was my flight, my last destination was Florida. When I got to Florida, they didn't tell me to sign any papers, as in, you know, going under, like, I have to go under any quarantine or anything like that. I was like, okay, is it that easy? I even talked to that lady, you know. I'm like, okay, so is there any paper I need to sign? And she's like, okay, you're coming from a safe country. You can go. I'm like, okay, cool. But I've been through Seoul. I've been to LA. So, you know, if there's chances for me to cut that thing. But you were like, okay, just go. So, you know, we got to Florida. The next day I was out, and 2 days later I flew to Haiti. But Haiti, they were like a little bit more strict in terms of quarantine. If you come to visit, well, me, I'm from there, so they're like, okay, so they knew that I got family there and all. So they're like, okay, so my mom, you know, pretty much my family, they had to sign something saying that, okay, he's going to stay there for 14 days. But they were not tracking us. They were not, like, you know, tracking me as Taiwan, because I didn't stay inside for 14 days. The first 2 days I slept in, and after that I was out, you know, all about going to see friends and family members. But that was the only thing, just that they had you sign something saying that, okay, you're staying in quarantine. That's the only difference. And after that, from Haiti to Florida, pretty much it was that. And then in New York, Boston, and there's three states that were like pretty strict. So if you're flying from Florida to New York, you definitely got to go into quarantine. Because if you get caught, you're going to pay a $2,000 fine. Boston, the same thing. I think is I forgot the third. Connecticut is the same thing too. So mind you, I was flying from Florida, so I was going to New York. So I had to fly from Florida to Baltimore, but from Baltimore I had to take the bus Maryland, from Maryland to Jersey, and Jersey to New York. So I'm like, okay, so if I did that and I bypassed it, so that means everybody can do it. People that must definitely got that same, you know, cut that virus down in Florida, and then definitely flew from, you know, Baltimore or Maryland, and then take a bus and or drive down to New York. So I'm like, okay, you know, they're still doing that, but it's still not effective, you know, the same as Taiwan is doing. But yeah, other than that, that's it. And then, but I don't know, like something that you said earlier that I really wanted to say. One thing I really want people that are listening, is that America is a big country, and if you're living in America, you would definitely forget that. You would forget how big it is and how hard it would be for people to control, you know, what does, you know, people that are living in the country are doing, and then all the ways you can sort of go around things, and then how they would let you go if it's not a really big offense. Like if it's not something that, okay, it's gonna hurt a lot of people, like a state emergency or a national security, like, you know, something big, they would just let you go with it. Like, there's this lady that flew from Florida. She got into New York, and then she didn't go into any quarantine. And then she's literally, I was at home and she came and visited. I'm like, didn't you just flew from Florida yesterday? She's like, yeah. I'm like, weren't you supposed to stay in? She's like, fine, nobody got to stay in. So that's what I'm saying. It's different, you know? But at the same time, it's just that the fact that America is so big, it's so hard for them to, you know, to do it because they, in one way, they don't want to do it. And the other way is because that the country's so, you know, too much liberty, you know? People are they got too much liberty to do whatever they want. So therefore they're like, okay, just let them do what they want, you know, unless they're not bothering me personally. You feel me? You know, that's one thing I want people to always remember with America. Because I used to do that comparing Taiwan and America. When I got there, when I went there, I'm like, okay, Taiwan is just like New York is like five times, almost 10 times bigger than I'm talking about the States than Taiwan. So can you imagine how easy for them to control 34 million people, the population 23 million.
Yeah.
It's easy to control 23 point something million people, like go into a hundred something million, 300 something million. That's the population of America. So I had to let me get myself together and not really make that comparison because it's two different places. And then the population wise, and then the country, the people that are ruling the country, the governance and all of that. So you just need to, get myself together and stop making that comparison.
Well, first I have a bunch of questions based on the things that you said. One thing I do want to kind of point out is I know from, because again, I feel like sometimes when I talked about the coronavirus, I do sometimes forget, like you said, how big America is and how, I don't want to use the word control, how difficult it is to rally people around the same cause. If you just simply look at politics, and no matter where you are, again, Chicago is thought to be very liberal, but I'm from Chicago. And I know a lot of my friends are farthest thing from liberal that, you know, that I can obviously think of. So it's, I can only imagine how hard it is to rally a tribe of people around, hey y'all, let's everyone wear masks, let's everyone stay inside, let's everyone quarantine, especially when you're so used to doing whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. Nice. And not having the government kind of, you know, interfere and say, hey, this is for your safety, let's go about doing it this way, but you absolutely have to. Not like you have a choice, it's like, no, you absolutely have to. So I look at something like vaccines. You have a choice to get vaccines. People can choose to vaccinate their children or themselves. Like, it's recommended by the government, but it's not mandatory. Whereas in Taiwan years ago, and I don't know if it's still the case now, a lot of times people, like, they have these little shots on their arms, and that's like something that all of them had up until a certain point because the government made them all do it as a way. I forget what it was for, but I'm actually going to have somebody on next time I'm talking about it.
Well, but like, while you brought this whole thing with government, I'm going to just slide something in when, you know, like I was talking about like how big it is to control the people. But one thing I'm going to say, we've really got to remember that America right now, and then for the past, I don't know how long, but it has really bad. I've had a really bad governance. Like the people that govern the country, it's really bad. Like the same thing, there are certain things that should be mandatory. There are certain things that should be mandated by the government saying you should do that. Because I'm going to just take something like out of the blood that has nothing to do with the country, like American people. I'm talking about the country. For example, right now, something that you might not know. Right now, America is blackballing Huawei. I don't know if you heard about this company.
No, I did not.
It's a telecommunication company. They make phones and blah, blah. They blackballing Huawei. Literally, they will, like, listen, they're going so far. They're saying, because, you know, they're, you know, CPUs and then those things, most of those chip. One company, it's an American company that makes them, Intel, and another company that I forgot the names. So pretty much every single phones or every single thing that you're using, it at least has 15 to 20% of American things done in it. So right now, the government, this government is saying that any company that's using anything, even if it's 1% American in it, you should not sell to Huawei. And then what happened right now, I'm talking about like as this week, all the companies I'm talking about, TSMC, MediaTek, Taiwanese company that they used to have to do business with Huawei, they had to stop. And Huawei was like, okay, before you guys stop, let me go and buy, let me go literally buy things for 2 years before. Because just to show you how powerful the country is. And sometimes I'm like, if you guys can be that powerful abroad, can pushing, you know, laws into other countries and changing things in other countries, my country, Haiti, and in literally affecting other people's business, certain things you could do it at home. For example, making everybody wearing masks. You feel me? So to me, right. I think it's something that should be, it's easy, but they just don't want to do it because of the governance. You feel me? So that's why I'm like, I just wanted to slide this in. Because saying about the whole thing with Riley, you know, if they said you should wear masks, if you don't wear masks, they would arrest you. they would do it the same way. Like, if you're not 21, you're not allowed to go and buy alcohol. And, you know, no one's going to do that. This is literally, this is simple as this, you feel me? So they could do it, but they just don't want to do it, you know?
And, you know, I do understand that from a large perspective, because again, for me, one of the fears, or one of the things I think that Taiwan did a good job of, or I don't want to say that. One thing that I recognize about the coronavirus cases that we were getting in Taiwan, right? So there was one period of time where there were a bunch of local cases. And look, when I say local, I mean people that were here, that were already living here, that didn't come from anywhere else, that just up and got coronavirus. But the majority of it, and I kind of want to put this in perspective and kind of talk with you about it as well, is a lot of the cases that we've got up until this point still have people that have been traveling through different places and have come back to Taiwan and have brought the virus back with them. So when you say things like, yeah, I went to Seoul, then I went to LA, then I went to New York, I went to Florida, and it's like, well, they weren't really, they said, oh, you came from a safe place, but kind of left out all the places in the middle that you kind of traveled to along the way and being on airplanes and so on and so forth. It's kind of like assuming that, in transit, everything was 100% okay. And you came from a safe country. So once you get here, everything must be fine, or you're not at a high enough risk for us to pay attention to, which will lead me to the question of being like, hey, what is a high risk person? Like, what if you are a high risk person going into America, what would that experience look like? Like, say you came from a country like Russia where there are hella cases, or what's another place, or you actually came from Wuhan during the Wuhan virus. Like, how would you be handled as an American citizen coming back into America during those times? Like, is there a quarantine process? Are you put in hospitals? And what if you don't have health insurance? Because I don't know if you do, but I know when I went back to America, I don't have health insurance. So if I go back, if they put me in a hospital, am I supposed to pay for that? Or can I opt not to pay for it or not be a part of that process because I financially just can't afford it? Like, there's so many questions I have, like, you know, just from listening to your experience, like beyond that, it's like, all right, how do we adjust to this? Like, what about all these other questions of people who may not be in a similar situation of you having to adjust to being back?
Yeah, well, so, the thing that you said about the insurance, you know, health insurance, I don't have health, because I've been living here for 5 years, going to six, right? So I don't have that. And I'm like 20, I'm 28 years old. You know, once you go into over 25, if you were under your parents' insurance, you're not anymore. So I'm 28 years old, so I don't have any of that anymore. So when I went there, I actually took a test in Florida. I did a test in Florida, it was free, and I got the results in 3 days. And when I was up, I was in Jersey, I had to take a test. I went to at least four places. Guess what? You had to pay. There was a place it would cost you $225 to get a test. There was another place $200. There was another place $165. I'm like, I had to talk to one of them. I'm like, listen, don't you guys should literally know this is why people are not testing, because you are charging people. Because how can you not get this thing together that it's a disease that is affecting the whole country, the whole world, and you're asking somebody, in order to get tested, you need to pay. And $165, like $225 just to take a test?
Yeah, that's a lot.
And it was like, you know, it's not me, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, I get it. Well, but just America's definitely by next year, this same time next year, America's still going to have cases, because you guys need to change that. So the same thing you're talking about health insurance, and I was telling you, like, what if I have the disease? Like, we would just tell you to go home and stay home, like, you know, stay, you know, just quarantine yourself for 14. Like, what if it's, you know, it's bad? It's like, we'll take you to the hospital, we check your insurance. I'm like, what if I don't? It's like, okay, well, would, you know, you would pay out of pocket. I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. You know, this is not fair at all. Because a lot of people that, you know, don't have insurance that are living in America. And some of those people, you know, minorities, they're actually, you know, we're the one most affected by this thing. A lot of us, we don't have insurance because we can't afford it. So what do? We just die. So I'm like, okay, this is a lot of thing. You know, there was this ridiculous thing to sort of put a lot of, you know, shine a big light on America, you know, especially people that are living abroad, that people that used to see America as this, you know, wonderful, you know, shining land. And now they've seen this thing because they're out there on, you know, on every social media, every platform. They start to know about it, you know. So it's just ridiculous, you know, the way they do things, they handle things and treat people.
Yeah, and I guess one of my last questions would be, because I know I have a sister where our family obviously is back in America, and one of the things I always ask them, I say, hey, how active are you, or how active are the people that you're around? It doesn't necessarily have to be your friends or family, but people that you see, how active or how willing are they to do self-testing? So was you know, like self-testing in order to be around your family. Because my sister, she travels around the states a little bit. So she goes to different states. And before she goes home, like, she's always adamant about, hey, like, I hate taking this test. She gets it for free through a company. So, again, that's a blessing in of itself. But like, she's like, I always get tested before I go back around my mom or around like my sister has kids. I always get tested before I go back. And I quarantine for 3 days or I quarantine for a day and a half, but I make sure I'm tested to make sure that I'm not asymptomatic or that I have the virus. So was that something that you were cognizant of? And also like people that you were around or people that you know, is that something that they were also like, hey, no matter what, I'm going to get tested if I'm going to go in a certain place to be around certain people, just because I want to be, you know, just because something that I want to do to make sure that I'm not impacting people that I care about in a certain way or in a different way with the virus.
Well, with all the people that I've met when I went back home, was only three of us. It was me, my mom, and my brother-in-law. Only the three of us that got tested. My brother-in-law got tested because of his job. Because his job, you know, said you gotta get tested. My mom got tested because, you know, she was going to the hospital, you know. She, you know, and they're like, okay, you gotta take the test. So she did. And it was me. And pretty much everyone else, they're like, we can't afford it. Or we don't have the luxury of time to, you know, just go and take a line and just take a test. And I was like, okay, how do you know you don't have it? They're like, well, I have not been coughing. I don't have a fever. I don't have diarrhea. Right. I have not lost, you know, the sense of taste or smell. So I'm good. I'm like, well, you could be asymptomatic. I'm like, and they're like, oh, well, people around me don't have it. I'm like, well, it kind of makes sense. If you don't have any of those things that you mentioned earlier, people around you don't have it. So maybe you don't have it. So that's a logic thing literally based themselves on, because they can't afford it because they may not want to spend $165 or $200 on it, you know, on a test, or they don't have the time to go and take a long line to take the free test. So pretty much, I would say, I don't think a lot of like people that when I went back home, I don't think, as I said, only three people that I know of got tested: me, my mom, and my brother-in-law. After that, no one else got tested because of the reason I mentioned earlier.
So did you find yourself doing a lot of research about the virus and about the symptoms before going back? Sure. Or yeah. Okay.
Sure. Listen, you gotta ask Nini about that. She told you, like, I was to go crazy I was in Taiwan. I was like crazy, always checking like what's going on, you know, what are the cases in this and that place, and then what are the symptoms, what are new things I just found out, and then where's the virus? I was like crazy about it because, well, pretty much it's my nature of I always want to get to know things. But now I'm like, I'm at this point right now, I'm like, I'm still afraid, I still, you know, take precautions, I still wash my hands, but I'm like, probably just that it grew into me just like into like, oh, okay, I'm gonna live with it. I don't have it. I still got to, you know, take care, you know, just be careful, but I'm not going to be worried as I used to be. But I was crazy. If you check my phone, you go on Google, Google would literally mention COVID. This is what happened to COVID. Because I used to check Google all the time, you know, just going crazy about that thing.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I mean, I know for me, that was something that when it first came out, I was very honestly, because we were in Taiwan, it was like, oh, they didn't really make it. They did a lot of things to prepare us for it, but I think the information for foreigners anyway wasn't as readily available until it hit America, where it's like, okay, now I'm getting everything in English about the virus and like all these symptoms coming out. Oh, if you lose your sense of taste, then you got to buy. I'm like, damn, like I really like I like the way things taste. I don't want to do that. So it's like I think for us it was kind of different. It was like, okay, coronavirus, it's a deadly virus, and everybody was saying it's like the flu. Cool. But once I want to say maybe March and April hit, once America got hit, I was like, oh, I need to do some research to make sure I'm like, because the thing is, I'm already a germaphobe. So like washing hands and wearing masks, that was really a big adaptation for me. It was like, you know what? I'm cool with this. It makes me feel even more comfortable in public spaces. But again, it's just like knowing what to look out for and how to kind of prepare yourself. So was there ever like a situation when you were back where like someone maybe coughed or like there was an awkward situation that was like circled around someone potentially having the coronavirus or someone being unsafe and not following proper protocol while back in America or Haiti?
Haiti is not a really, like, it's not a clean country. There's a lot of, you know, but one thing though in Haiti is just that, I didn't really see a lot of people wearing masks as I saw people wearing masks in America or Taiwan, but because I didn't really go crowded places. I just, you know, wanted to see my family and all of that. And pretty much, I didn't really see that, but in America, for sure, it happened to me. It happened like literally me. I went to visit my aunt. She got a heart problem and I went to see her. But before I walked in, I sneezed, and she was in the basement. She said, "Okay, I'm gonna talk to you. Stay upstairs. I'm gonna talk to you." So I felt weird. I was like, "Okay, so I can't even go and hug my I can't even give her a hug. I can't even kiss her. I can't even see her because she heard me sneeze. Because she said, "Who sneezed?" I said, "It's me." She's like, "Okay, stay up there. I'll talk to you." I'm like, "Okay, all right." I'm like, "Okay," but I get it that it's. Because of it literally brings a phobia, the fact that if you sneeze, you might have it. If you cough, you might have it. And if you're somebody not wearing masks, a lot of ridiculous things that you never used to take, really care about. Now those things literally brings a lot of phobia and it makes you feel, you go on hands like, okay, you might have it because you sneeze. You might have it because your hands are dirty. But you put your hands in your mouth. You might have it. You might cut it. So it happened to me. I was like, okay, this is a really bad thing. It's a really bad thing. And I should not, because I was like that too. I was on a plane. Mm-hmm. Somebody was scratching it through something. Like, there was this guy really far away from me. He scratched his throat twice. I was like, okay, all right, let me put my face shield on. I had my mask on and I had to add my face shield. I was flying from Seoul to LA.
Mm.
That happened.
Because I know for me, it's like one experience that I had, and I talked through this with a friend, because I was going into the hospital in Taiwan, and I know, again, we're foreigners, obviously, and this was, in June. So it was after Taiwan, I was pretty solid control over it, and everything was pretty much business as usual. But I'm walking to the hospital because for some reason, my bank is inside of a hospital, whatever. So I'm going to the hospital, and everyone else is walking, all the Taiwanese people, all the doctors, whatever, like people that look noticeably sick are walking in. I walk in and the security guy's like, "Oh, no, you come here. And I'm like, "Hey, what's up? Do you need some? I speak Chinese." He's like, "Oh, I have to take your temperature." So first thing I was like, "Oh, that's fine." But then, as I went to walk towards the bank, again, don't make no sense why I was in the hospital. And I'm like, wait a second. All these other people who are also outside walked into the same bank and you didn't stop to check their temperature twice, because they already have the systems up where they can read it when mm-hmm. you walk in. But for me, you literally stopped me, and I said, I know it's because I'm a foreigner, but at the same time, I'm like, you cared. I'm like, for my own personal safety, I would appreciate if you also checked everybody else's temperature. Thanks. The same way you check mine. I'm like, why would you go out of your way to check me, as if, again, you don't know who I am. I'm a foreigner, but obviously if I'm in Taiwan, I have to follow all the rules because they're very strict.
Yeah, true.
Even
true.
More so because I'm a foreigner, right? They'll pay more attention to me. But the fact that that security guard took that much effort to single me out, but then not single out everybody else that was walking out, I felt some kind of way about that for a few days. I was like, you know what? I get it, because foreigners, at the beginning, foreigners were not following the rules. I will say that. So I do mm-hmm. understand like the extra added emphasis to us. But at the same time, it's like, man, if you're going to be that, I live here too. I'm a resident, not a citizen. I'm a resident here too. I would also appreciate you reciprocating that same energy with your fellow Taiwanese people who also may be traveling for work or doing whatever. So like, was like when you went back in, I know, again, you're a resident in these places, but was mm-hmm. Was that kind of feeling, or was it kind of like, hey, welcome back, coronavirus, mm-hmm. go on about your business?
Well, when I landed, there was the busiest day ever, because when we landed, they told us that, because here's one thing I do. When I get to Taiwan, before I start to speak Chinese, I let anyone, any Taiwanese know I speak Chinese, I start to speak English, because, I'm like, before I see if you can speak English, just so we can, it makes it easy for me. So I'm like, okay, trying to talk to this guy. And he's like, "Oh, you got to take a line." I'm like, "Why do I need to take the line?" I said, "Oh, today's the busiest day. We got 700 people, coming in, 700 people, like got people that are, transferring from other places, people that are at layovers and shit. And then we also have people that are coming in." I'm like, okay, so it was a long line. And then when I got to the line, the guy took, he thought that I didn't really know what to do. He was like, "Okay, this is what you got to do. This is what you got to do." And I was like, "Why do I have to do all of that?" And he's like, "Well, pretty much, because you're coming in. If you are coming in as a, you're coming in as a worker, you are a student, you are a resident just coming back, you have to follow these rules." And then I didn't feel some type of, because I saw that all the Taiwanese, they were doing the same thing. But he was just giving me an extra, like my situation and yours is a little bit different, because he was giving me an extra help, like an extra care. Like he took me on the side. And then it sort of flipped out when I switched in Chinese, which I should have never done. When I started to speak Chinese, like, oh, you speak Chinese? Okay, go back to the line. I'm like, okay, fuck. I should have Chinese. So I went to the line, and then it was pretty smooth because the thing that I was supposed to, like, there was an application that you had to, you know, you had to fill out an application. I did that before I came to Taiwan. So when it came and I showed them, oh, I already filled it out. I was like, okay, you don't need to stick the line, so go ahead. And I went ahead and they took my temperature. They asked me where I'm going to stay at. They take my phone number and they let me go. And they did that. A person came and took my temperature, right? So I passed that person. And there's this huge, huge booth that has a really big machine that taking every single person's temperature. So they literally I had to be screened twice.
Yeah.
So I, you know, walked there in and out. I had to talk to another, I had to go through, you know, immigration and talk to the guy, let me in. And I had to talk to somebody, ask me about things I have in my bag. This is pretty much what happened in Taiwan, pretty much. They were just asking what I have in my bag, if I have, you know, if I want to declare anything. I was like, no. And he's like, okay, welcome back. And he let me in. But when it comes to, like, you know, singling foreigners out, they do, because pretty much most of the time they do because they think that you don't understand, you don't speak Chinese, and you might not know what to do or, you know, what are the rules, you know, in order for you to get, you know, to do what you got to do. This is why they usually single us out. But sometimes, you know, not to play the racist card, sometimes they just being racist. Sometimes they just being racist. Well, sometimes it is just blatant racism, you feel me?
You know, that's actually a perspective I never really vocalized. Like, you're right. Sometimes, especially in an airport, like they may put you in a special place to make you do extra things because, hey, we don't think you understand fully what the requirements are. And it's not just for the coronavirus. It can be for anything. So that actually is, again, a good way to thank you. Like, I didn't really think about that. Good way to think about it. But also in the same breath, yeah, sometimes just be like, oh, you black. I need you to come over here to this line so I can talk about you. But that's actually, I literally never really thought about it like that.
Because the thing that said about black people, one thing here, I'm gonna tell you one, like, I don't know if there's any Taiwanese listener, I'm gonna tell you, it's something that you gotta do. Any like, I don't know how good your Chinese is, because I know that I'm like really fluent in Chinese. If you want to make any Taiwanese freak out, just go out there and tell them racist. They could definitely go out there and hang themselves. They don't want to be called racist, although they are racist. Like, all races don't want to be called racist, right? But here in Taiwan, it's ridiculous. Because as I, you know, just to not, you know, deflect from the whole thing, it's just that here in Taiwan, the racism is literally based on ignorance. They're doing and saying things they don't know because they just don't know. They were not taught well, you feel me? But yeah, like, singling black people out, it happened to me, you know, a couple times here. It happened to my friend before I left. One of my friends was riding a scooter. They stopped them, asked him for his ARC. They didn't ask for passport. They said ARC. They didn't ask for license. Right. They didn't ask him, let me see your ARC.
I need that.
It happens to me too. It happens to me too, literally before I left. The guy, I was going to the bank and I was walking out. The cop called me and said, okay. He said, it's not racism. It's not nothing. Can I see your ARC? And I'm like, what? Because they were doing that, not only because of, you know, I didn't really put it on, like, me being black. They were doing it because back then they were starting to, you know, kicking out, you know, people that are overstaying in Taiwan. Because, you know, a lot of people that came on visa, on visitor visas, and they, because of the whole pandemic, they, you know, started giving them extensions. And some people, they're like, okay, it's time for you to go. And some of those people, they were not leaving the country. So they're like, okay, let me see who, if you're a foreigner, don't care who you look like, you know, I don't care what you look like, you black, you white, I'm gonna check you out. But it happens to three black people so far. I don't think it happened to any white, but it happened to me, two of my friends. I'm like, okay, so there's something going on with black people here, right? But most of the time when they do single, you know, us out as foreigners, they're doing it because they assume that we don't really know or understand what is going on, like, what are the rules, and they just want to give us an extra care and help us out. This is pretty much, you know, why they do that most of the time.
Because, I mean, because I know in Taichung specifically, there was someone that I knew, he was a white man, that actually got the coronavirus. And, like, shortly after that, everywhere I went, it was like a heightened sense of foreigner, like, oh, foreigners could get it too. But I do still feel like, and I'll just be honest, I do still feel like that even though a white foreigner got it, and I don't know if any black foreigners on the island have gotten the coronavirus, knock on wood, shout out to y'all being black. Black is beautiful. I don't know if any of us has gotten it, but I still feel like because we are black, or because we are, you know, people of color, that it's still a difference in, oh, a white person got it, but you still could get it even more. And even like ignoring all the data, because the fact is data from black and like African and like all these different types of country people of color are, we don't get that data here, or they don't get the data here as much as they get it from the white countries like Britain, America, you know, like Europe. They don't get data about us as much as we get, you know, as much as they get about those other countries. So it's easy for them to make that assumption like, if white people are getting it, then black people, y'all definitely gonna get it. Whereas kind of, you know, like kind of the opposite. Sometimes I get that feeling, because to me it's like, oh, you know, just from being here and the experiences that I've had, sometimes like, oh, if a foreigner does it, especially if you're a black foreigner, it's like, it's times two. And it's things that have happened in the past, not necessarily recently, but in the past, I've always had that feeling where it's like, I've always been viewed a little bit worse than, you know, someone else that's, you know, a white person or that's not a black person like myself. One of the, also the scary things, as I hear you talk about your story, is that right before the coronavirus hit, so maybe in like November, I actually went to China and I had a fever. Like I was sick. I don't know how I got sick. I rarely get sick. I had a fever and I was going into China, and then like I knew I was hot and I was like, damn, I don't know what's going to happen. And they pulled me over. I had to get a blood test. I did not want them to do that. They had to get a blood test and they literally tracked me my entire time in China. And I was like, man, it was kind of scary, because they were like, again, I speak Chinese, but they were like, hey, yeah, we got to take your blood sample. We got to get your phone number. We got to get your passport. And you have to check in with us every 5 hours. And that was pre-coronavirus. And it was in China. So it was the scariest thing. I'm like, damn, y'all got to take my blood. What you going to do with my blood? Am I going to become a mutant? Are y'all going to clone me? I didn't know what they were going to do with my blood sample, because I thought like, hey, you know, they quarantine you, they give you some medicine. But it was none of that. It was kind of just that experience. So that was pre-coronavirus. That was weird. But I do want to say, like, how good is your Chinese? Are you a fluent speaker of Chinese?
Well, I would say that I speak Chinese pretty good. My Chinese is pretty good, but I forgot one thing though, which is really weird. You know, I went, because when I moved to Hsinchu, I actually went to school. I went to school in Taiwan, and I had to. This is one of the ways that, because as you know, we were talking earlier in the beginning of the whole podcast, we were talking about like how you meet, you know, making friends and all of that. One of the things I really wanted to do is, how do I integrate in this place? I know that in Asia, it's really hard to let foreigners, if you don't look like them, it would be really hard for you to integrate into their society and all of that. It would make it really hard. So I was like, let me speak their language. It would be a little bit easier for me to get to them and then show them that I know their culture and stuff like that. So I went to school and then I studied Chinese. But the thing is, I read Chinese, but I forgot most of the characters that I learned. Like in terms of like recognizing, but saying them, I can talk about politics, I can talk about movies, I can talk about pretty much a lot of topics. But if it comes to reading them, I don't think I'll be able to read them, which is really odd, right? I can't write it anymore, I can't read it anymore, but I can talk about a lot of things.
And the worst thing that happened to me when I was in Beijing and I was going to school to learn Chinese was they had cell phones that came out, and I was like, oh, I can just text in Chinese. I no longer have to write. So I'm good at texting. But again, like writing and reading, it's just like, and it's weird because I can text and reading. Reading, it's gotten better because I text more in Chinese and I have to read more and I study more. But like the writing thing, completely out of there. And one of the things I do want to, the last thing I'll mention is I'm very similar. I do speak fairly good Chinese, not like near fluent, but not that good, but okay. And I always start in English because it's just, once you start in Chinese, it's like, there's no turning back. Like they will not, like Taiwan people usually they don't try at all unless they want to practice English themselves to go back to English. Like, nope, you speak Chinese,
you're at least going to keep going. But to me, I love it though. Because it's one of the, I learned right in the spot. This is how I learned Chinese right now. Cause I don't remember the last time I picked up a book and then start to read. Well, probably, you know, helping some friends out, but I didn't do that. Like, personally, just let me go get a book and read. I didn't do that. But I love the fact that I'm like, you know, when I see them and start to speak Chinese and they go really hard on me, so this is a way for me to understand. Because once you get, there's a certain level you get into the language, there are words that they would say to you. You might not know what the characters look like, what are the characters they put together to come up with that word. But you would know what it means. And then your brain would literally, you know, store that, like the word would be stored in, like, okay, I knew that's the word that I heard. And I got many examples, like things that I've heard people saying once. And then I got the context, and the next thing I know, I'm using the same word, I'm saying the same thing in the same context. And then if it were to me to text it, I wouldn't be able to do so. But it just, I don't know why my brain is like that, but it doesn't work like that, which is crazy.
Oh, well, thank you. So this is a part of the podcast. First, I want to thank you for being a part of the show. I mean, I've learned so much. It was great talking to you. And thank you so much for sharing all your experiences. We're going back to America, going back to Haiti, and also your experience here in Taiwan.
Well, I was really happy to, you know, be part of your podcast and experience, sharing my experiences and all of that. Well, one thing I wanted to add, though, is, this is like kind of a me, like sort of trying to, talk about something I do. I got a little thing, a little business that I'm putting together. It's called TZ. It stands for T-shirt Easy Pick. It's I'm trying to do like with those, agencies, because it's really hard for teachers to get jobs here. And when you get jobs through those Taiwanese agencies, it's really tough because like they give you jobs because it's really easy to get jobs. But the thing is, they don't really follow up because us foreigners, when we come here, they don't really take care of you. Like they don't help you settle. They don't follow through with anything, like in terms of like, getting your ARC done. Some of them would just go with you the first day or the first 2 days, and after that, you on your own. So what I'm doing is like I know the struggle, and I know sometimes the contract that the agencies are having the teachers signing in, and that sometimes they don't really want to take side, like the teacher's side. So I'm like, okay, I've been here for so long and I've taught English for so long, so I know the business, I know the ins and outs. So I'm like, okay, let me come up with that. So that's the whole idea. This is why I came up with this thing. It's called TZ. We've been working with a lot of schools already. And we've got a website. It's called tzeep.com. Everybody can go and check it out. And, tzeep. TEAZEEPZAP.com. Tzeep. It's T. You can write it down. Anybody's listening. TEAZEEP.com. Easy. So as I said, Tzeep stands for Teachers Easy Pick. So for schools, they want teachers because one of the reasons why I was in America was because I'm trying to, have this thing set in America, go to college. Because, like first graduate, when the people are fresh out of school, you graduate, you don't know what you're doing, especially right now with coronavirus. A lot of people, there's no jobs. I'm like, okay, you could definitely take this trip. I know it's, it could be, feel like, it's dangerous out there, but it's not. Especially in Taiwan, it's super safe. You can definitely come once the country's open. And so if you go in and work, at Starbucks for like, $9 an hour or $10 an hour, it depends on the states you live in, depends on the minimum wage, but you could definitely come here and travel, have this, foreign experience. You come here, you see what the world look like, and you'll still make money. And I know in Taiwan, like, it will be easy for you in terms of like saving money, like in terms of like seeing what, what other countries look like, in terms of like learning from another culture. So I'm like, it will be really good for anybody that is interested in traveling. And then you would make money off a language that you got for free, a language that you were born speaking, and you make money off of it, literally. So I do that. I do some marketing. I went there in America. That's one of the reasons I was in Maryland. Went to a couple of, campuses and then, post jobs. And now I'm like, I'm back in Taiwan. I'm like, going to schools, put out flyers and stuff like that. So I was like, listen, I had to put it out there. So we got a Facebook page. People can just go on Facebook /TZeep. You would find us, follow us on Facebook and Instagram, same thing, TZeep. And yeah, so anybody that wants a job, we got friends in America, Canada, UK that are interested, would definitely help you guys, find a job in Taiwan and help you out throughout the whole process. And not only just when you get there, we're done. We will help you out through the whole process, help you settle and everything.
Oh, well, that is where it's at. First, it is TEAZEAP.com. You guys check it out. If you guys want to start working and living abroad, and specifically in Taiwan, definitely go there. You can hit me up and I'll definitely redirect you to them directly. Just let me know. Mm-hmm. Also, Nene gonna be real mad because we're gonna start hanging out, because this is basically what I did for 10 years before I started the podcast and I stopped like recruiting. Like I think it was different. I worked at one school and I recruited only for that particular school because I was a director. Mm-hmm. So I was in charge of hiring. I've hired over 75 black people or people of color throughout my 10 years here directly to work here. So I'm really excited that you have been doing that and will continue doing that, because again, it's hard for us to find methods to get here. When I say us, I mean people of color, black people, to get here and to find support and to find community and to know why it's a good opportunity and why it's a good reason to come to Taiwan. Like the reason why I do the podcast also to shed light on the many opportunities, not just here in Taiwan, but there are available around the world for us to kind of see and to do, and how easy it is to kind of take it up and do it. And it may not be something that you end up doing for three, four, five, 10 years even. But it's always good, fresh out of college, to graduate and get an experience unlike any other, and also gain money while you're doing that, with the, also the opportunity to travel around the world and see the world as you are gaining finances, gaining experiences, meeting people that you never thought you or could meet, and then also seeing the world. So there, that in and of itself is priceless. And it's something that I wish, I hope, and I wish that more of us will take advantage of in the future and realize that, hey, America's great. You know, these countries, Europe is great. All these places are great. But there's so much more to the world than, you know, what we see on a daily basis and what we see on Facebook and Instagram. And we can't continue to live through other people, right? When, especially when you have the opportunity and the chance to live and experience things on your own as an individual in another place around the world. And honestly, I'm really glad that I landed in Taiwan because it's super safe here. And shout out to Universal Healthcare. Oh my God. Yeah. And food may not be hidden, but as long as you got a friend, shout out to Winnie, they can hop on the stove, and Nene, I think she was cooking too, then you are blessed. Because I'm not going to lie, I'm definitely going down to change you to visit y'all, because I'm so hungry. I'm so tired of eating rice. But this is the part of the podcast where I want to end. If you have any questions for me, Clifton, you can definitely ask me. Any questions for me? I know I asked you a bunch of questions.
Well, pretty much the only question I had was, what was the reason why you came up with the whole podcasting? Like, because I know, like, right now that you're doing it full time. Like, what was the thing, like, you woke up in the morning, you're like, let me just do this. Let me just go up and then, like, I'm going to go full time and do this. You know, I'm going to just go and do, like, literally spend my time and do a podcast. What was the whole thing behind this?
Well, I mean, the first thing was I'm always looking for ways to have an impact and to reach more people. So again, I was 10 years ago when I was recruiting, because like I hired Patrick, I hired a bunch of Black expats that I've interviewed for the podcast. And I was like, hey, like it was really difficult for me to, well, it wasn't difficult. I was finding struggles in reaching more people to share the opportunity of working in Taiwan, and not just in Taiwan, but other places around the world. So the first thing I wanted to do was find different avenues. So again, Facebook and all that wasn't as popping as it is now back then. But I wanted to find a way to get the message out about what I was doing and share my experiences and my stories in a way that people didn't have to read articles. So what I learned from having a travel company, people don't really read. They don't read everything. They'll read bits and pieces. They'll clamp on the headlines. But people will listen to what you have to say as long as you can deliver it in an engaging way and you have like points and ideas that they can relate to. The second thing was I was writing my second book. And I had severe writer's block. Again, I'm not a writer by nature, but I finished my first book and I wanted to get started on my second one, and I couldn't get the thoughts out. And then one day I was just sitting down and we had a podcast called Six Packs with Expats, me and Patrick did. And I was like, you know what? What if I just talked out my stories and then use that audio to finish writing my second book? But the more I started talking out my stories, the more people I started to reach, and the more like I started my mentorship program because of my podcast. And I like so many things were getting started because of me just speaking things out in the open and letting people know what was going on. I was like, you know what? This is what I want to continue to do. And I've been doing it for 3 years. So first it started to answer your question directly as a way for me, one, to reach more people, to tell them about Taiwan and the benefits of living here and doing the amazing things that I was able to do, traveling to 50 countries in 8 years. The second was to finish my second book. Like I was struggling, I couldn't do it. And I still haven't finished my second book because podcasting kind of took over. But the more I started talking and the more I started doing interviews and the more I started making connections with people and learning so much about myself and about the world, I was like, you know what? Podcasting is something, it's for me. I enjoy talking, but more importantly, I enjoy listening. I enjoy doing interviews and I enjoy providing others with the knowledge and the experiences of other people, not just my own. And again, like from you, I learned so much just from talking to you today. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much from everyone that I'm able to interact with. And sometimes you miss out on those interactions. Like me and Clifton, like we've met maybe what, 3 or 4 times in person, but we were able to have such a great, rich conversation, even though we're not even in the same room. So again, cannot stress enough. Thank you so much for being part of the show and just for offering all of your wisdom to myself and also to the audience.
Well, one more question I would like to ask. You said you've been living, like, pretty much you've been living abroad, Taiwan. I don't know if it's Taiwan or abroad, for about 10 years going up to 12. Have you ever thought about, okay, you know what? There's going to be a time. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be like Taiwan or wherever I'm living right now. It's going to be, you know, my time's going to be up. I'm going to go back to America. Have you ever had this thing, or like, have you thought of that? Do you have any plans, or have you thought of that and, you know, going back to America at some point?
The One thing I did do is my seventh year, I had been directing, and I kind of reached a plateau where my whole staff was Black. Shout out to Patrick, because he definitely helped with that. My whole staff was Black. So I worked at a private school, and we had 10 teachers, all of them were Black or people of color. And that was great. But it reached a point where I had done amazing things at the school I was working at. I was recruiting. It was a program that was self-sufficient, and I felt incomplete. And I was like, you know what? I was 21 years old when I came to Taiwan, and I was, 27, 28 at that time. So I'm like, you know what? I've been doing the same thing for so many years. I need to try and see something different. I need to see if going back to America is something I want to do. So I took 5 months and I went back to America. Hated it. I hated working there. I didn't hate the place I was working, because I worked at my alma mater. I liked the work I was doing, but it was such a difference in the freedom I felt. I didn't feel free as free as I felt. And it sounds weird, right? I didn't feel as free as I felt in Taiwan. I didn't feel like I was learning as much as I learned just being an expat daily in Taiwan. I felt disconnected from what drove me, which was every day something different can happen. Whereas when I was back in America, outside of seeing family, because that in and of itself is amazing and don't want nothing to do with family. Nice. I just felt so incomplete on a daily basis. Like I couldn't just up and go to another country. I can go to another state, but it's more of the same, except for going to Louisiana because that food is bomb. But like, I came back and I was like, you know what? This is where I need to be. But my end all be all goal is I've been an entrepreneur, a full on entrepreneur, where either I have a business here, a bar, or where I'm hiring people to come out and employing them and things like that. But I want to spend 6 months in Taiwan and then 6 months in another country. That's always been my end goal. Is I know Taiwan can't be my forever home. It could be. I don't want to say it's out of the realm of possibility, but I do want to make sure I have that space to go back home and see my family whenever I want. When you teach, you can't do that because you're on a teaching schedule. I can go back during the summer and I can go back during Chinese New Year. I want to pop up for Thanksgiving and see my family. I want to be a part of the 4th of July. I want to be there for my grandma and my grandma and my mother's birthdays and my nieces and nephews' birthdays. I want to be able to do things on my own time. So I think the 10 years has led me in. I'll include Patrick in this too. He's listening, so he can chime in if he would like. But we're at that entrepreneur stage. We've done the office job. We've done the creative job. We've done the hiring people job. We started our own business already. Now it's time to do things on our own because we've learned so much from these experiences. It's not to be cocky or anything. It's like, hey, we've done so many different things. And I was like, all right, how can we apply this to the lifestyle that we want to live? And acknowledging that the expat lifestyle has changed us for the better. So instead of trying to go back and do it the American way, now it's time to do it the way that we've worked so hard to be able to do it. And there's nothing wrong with that. Because before we were fighting that, I mean, I want to see Patrick on that. I was fighting that. Man, I got to go home. I got to get married. I got to have kids. My kids go to no Taiwanese school. They got to be in school all day. And I'm like, that's not it. That's not where it's at. You literally can control your own destiny. You just have to have that mindset and take steps to make it happen. So TEAZEAP.com is a step in that direction. Correct me if I'm wrong, for yourself. And again, I cannot speak enough about how amazing, how great it is. And I'm going to be shouting it out to my mentor group in America. I mentor a group of kids in high school and rising seniors in college that are always looking for opportunity. So I'll definitely push them your way as well.
Thanks. All right. Thank you so much, man. I had a good time being a part of that podcast today, man. A good time.
Thank you so much, Clifton, for being a part of the podcast. Thank you for joining us. Sorry for keeping you for so long. I know I said 30 minutes and went over an hour and 7 minutes.
It was all good, man. I had a good time. You know, loved the things that we shared. And, I learned a lot today. You know, it was really good. And the fact that I had the chance to share and reach out to people, you know, things that I know and, certain point of view that people, didn't have. So we had the chance to do that today. You know, I'm really blessed to do that today. And thank you. Thank you very much.
So thank you so much for tuning to the Black Expat Podcast, y'all. Again, one more time for Clifton, everybody that's listening. Every Friday, America time, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can catch me on the live show. Feel free to call in. We've gotten a few call-ins so far. I want to get more of those. Also, if you're listening, please become a patron of the Black Expat Podcast. I am doing this full-time, 24/7. It is the one thing that I'm doing. So if you don't mind, become a patron. Click the link in the description. Again, I am Carl. Thank you for my guest, Clifton, for being a part of the show. I am Carl, the Black Expat. We out, you.